This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Cliff May, the founder and president of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, writing most recently at the Washington Times about the American military, its strength and its necessity of strength to continue. Cliff, a very good evening to you. The phrase peace through strength has been used so often over the last 2,000 years, it sometimes loses meaning. What does it mean about the U.S. military, about the way the Republic of the United States conducts its affairs? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you. Yeah, peace through strength is a shorthand. You're right. Usually, even the Romans understood this. If you want peace, you prepare for war. What does that mean? It means that if your enemies see you as formidable, as superior, as a force they cannot defeat, then they're unlikely to throw a punch because they'll see the danger of that. If they think, it's 50-50, it's a fair fight, it's worth a shot, then they will. So what you want to do, it's the most basic strategy. Strange that it's often ignored. You want to be so powerful that you can deter your enemies. If you can deter your enemies, you don't need to fight your enemies or defeat your enemies, which you want to have the ability to do. It is, no matter how expensive deterrence is, it is always cheaper than a war and certainly cheaper than losing a war. And yet we have a military that we have allowed to weaken over time, not least in the past 4 years. Strengthened a little bit under Trump, weakened under Obama for 8 years before that, at a time of increasing threat and challenge. And I'll just add this, that threat and challenge comes from what I would call, what we'd FDD call, an axis of aggressors, Beijing, Moscow, Tehran, Pyongyang, and a lot of junior partners in places like Havana and Caracas, and increasingly, I'm afraid, in places like Johannesburg.
You point to the Afghanistan abandonment in August of 21, before the whole world is watching the young man hanging from the wheelbase of the taking off aircraft and falling to his death. Everybody remembers that image just the way we remember, say, the 9/11 bodies falling out of the building. That event in your column connects with Ukraine. How so?
It was only a few months later. Look, Vladimir Putin, first of all, he invaded Ukraine in 2014, annexed Crimea, and began an insurgency in the eastern sections, the Donbas section of Ukraine. And the response to that from America and the so-called international community was tiny. It was not even a mosquito bite to him. So he knew that he could do what he wanted to do. But then when he saw the Americans capitulate to the Taliban, run from the Taliban, leave billions of dollars of munitions and weapons behind, he thought, okay, the Taliban doesn't even have an air force. Taliban, now is the perfect time for me to do what I need to do, which is conquer Ukraine and drag Ukraine back into the Russian Empire. That, I believe, and I've written about this for years, that is how Putin sees his mission to restore the Russian Empire. And he could figure, I'm not going to have any terrible ramifications or repercussions. And by the way, he did think, and a lot of American analysts thought too, I'll take Kyiv in 3 days. My army is a Soviet army under a different name.
The events in the Middle East these last months and years, the attack on Israel from several directions, directed by the brain in Tehran, did that also follow a calculation by our adversary that we would not respond or the response would be inadequate?
I think that is true as well. I also think that Hamas, under the leadership, let us say, of Sinwar, of Yahya Sinwar, thought this was a good time, that once he started this war with Israel, there would be a full attack coming also from Hezbollah, from Iran, perhaps from Syria, perhaps from various Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad cells in the West Bank, and from, of course, the Houthis in Yemen. That happened, but not the way he expected. For example, Hezbollah the day after the invasion of Israel by Hamas, began bombing the north of Israel. But for whatever reason, and I'm not sure I know, didn't actually invade, didn't send in their elite troops to take over the Galilee, to take over those towns, to rape and murder the way that Hamas did. And listen, a year ago, I was very worried about Israel's chances to survive, but they have gone effectively against Hamas, effectively against Hezbollah. Syria, the Syrian regime has fallen. That's another subject, but I think Israel, at least in the short run, benefits. And Israel is actually taking on the Houthis as well in Yemen to a greater extent. But yes, but your basic point is the most important, and that is that just as strength can deter, weakness is provocative to one's enemies. If they think they can take you down, they will try. You don't want that.
Your column identifies the Americans as commonsensical. They understand peace through strength. You point to a polling by the National Defense Survey of Public Opinion. And I learned from you something I knew implicitly. America is not made of isolationists who turn their back on trouble. Does the leadership in Washington know this?
They certainly should. They're paying attention, and I'm not really sure they are. I want to give credit where it's due. It's the Ronald Reagan Institute's annual National Defense Survey. It's always interesting. It's particularly interesting this year. People should look at it. It's available online. My column in the Washington Times cherry picks from it. What we do learn is that most Americans do get the concept of peace through strength. Most Americans are not isolationists. For example, the survey asks, is it better for the U.S., quote, to be more engaged and take the lead internationally, or, quote, less engaged and react? And guess what? 50% of the respondents said, take the lead. And by the way, included in that figure were 59% of Trump voters and, really interestingly, 61% of self-identified MAGA Trump voters. A lot of people think, because of Tucker Carlson and others, that MAGA voters are isolationists. According to this poll, not at all.
The events in New Orleans and Las Vegas are under investigation. The facts will continue to change. The first three reports are always wrong. That's the nature of warfare. However, the connection between the attacks and ISIS is in the news everywhere. So it's not overstepping the facts to say it's mentioned. Do we measure that the adversaries still continue to regard the U.S. as inadequate, as not strong?
I think they think that the U.S. is certainly vulnerable. I think they believe strongly that the jihad must continue, that there's no reason not to. I think it's important to understand that from what we know of the perpetrator in New Orleans, he was inspired by ISIS, by the Islamic State, that Sunni jihadism. A lot of people have been saying for years, oh, Sunni jihadism is over. Al-Qaeda, we haven't seen much from them. We've suppressed ISIS by taking away the caliphate they had in Syria and Iraq. We have American troops for a long time, about 900. I think for right now they're about 2,000 in northeast Syria. And their mission is to suppress ISIS. They do so with an army mostly of Kurds, some Arabs. And there have been a lot of people in the isolationist right and isolationist left who have said, bring those American troops home. We don't need to fight ISIS anymore. It's not a problem. They don't have a caliphate as such. But they do have combatants, including thousands and thousands who are essentially incarcerated and guarded by the Kurds. If we were to bring our troops home and not help them, they would probably be defeated and have to run, and all these ISIS combatants would be released to Europe or to come through the southern border, which is not yet secured of the United States. Some could be here now. And there are others who say, well, let the Turks handle it. Well, the way the Turks would handle it, I'm afraid, would be to kill the Kurds that have been allied with the U.S. I would hate to see the U.S. do that again. Listen, Trump at one point thought of doing that himself. You may remember that James Mattis resigned as defense secretary, saying, I won't betray our allies in Syria.
Finally, reports are that the recruitment for the military is falling short. Is it inadequate presentation by the Defense Department? Can it be reversed?
It's very much an expression of weakness. My son was training new recruits. They're not the best recruits right now. It's a bad image the military has and has had under Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. I kind of think that the main reason that Trump wants Pete Hegseth as Secretary of Defense is because he would be good for recruitment. He's young, he's handsome, he's a TV star. I can see him convincing a lot of young people, you want a career in a revitalized military. And a revitalized military is what we need, given the threats we face. And the survey I talk about from the Reagan Institute shows that Americans understand that we need a military that is can fight on more than one front at one time, a military that inspires awe in our many enemies.
Cliff May, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.